What's up, man?
What I wanted to talk about today was crafting an experience for your audience. And that begins not just at the beginning of the show, no matter what type of show it is, if it's a live stream or anything else, it's all about building that anticipation, that hype. And hype doesn't need to be a bad word. Building that excitement for the audience to deliver them something that can be awesome. And you have been particularly of interest to the world that I've been creating and stuff, because you're always kind of thinking about that, thinking about the audience. From your promo photos always look awesome, and
your
website looks awesome, and your set design looks awesome, and you've got lights. We could see you there. You're kind of lit up even in your living room there.
I don't have all the bells and whistles in here right yet, but I have a lot of them at the moment. But I have been filming from home, like a lot of guys, I think, are starting to battle that idea of performing magic in your living room. But it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, so let's dig right into it. So one of the, and you love spectacle.
I do.
I love that. I love the old school circus thing. You know, it's like there's like a theater in my living room right now, because I love the idea of building that anticipation. And do you want to, like, so some people might not know exactly what the things that you've been doing. I think a good place to start was maybe talk about the Houdini 100. If we're talking about spectacle and building an audience experience, that's a pretty spectacular thing.
That was a crazy idea that I came up with in 2010. When I was in New York City, of all places, I got to visit Harry Houdini's grave. And after that experience, I was gifted a book. I actually have that book on this set. So here, I'm gonna tilt this around right here. I have the Tashin Magic Book, right? Tashin Magic Book. In that book is a photo of Harry Houdini doing the upside down straitjacket escape in downtown Pittsburgh. Now, I only figured this out from literally seeing this image in a book, and then seeing in the back on the building, it said the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And it was dated in the corner. So right then and there, I had the idea of recreating it on the 100th anniversary. That would even be possible, of doing an upside down straitjacket escape in downtown Pittsburgh in this day and age, with all the rules and red tape you kind of have to figure out to do something like that. But when I discovered it in 2010, it was dated 1916, November 6, 1916. So therefore, I had almost, you know, five-ish years to think about it. But those years started to tick by really quick. And by, I would say it was probably 2013 is when I really started to, you know, commit to the project, and when I started to really figure it out. But when it all came together, you know, I had drones flying downtown, and, you know, we went over the top with it. We had thousands of people turn out into downtown Pittsburgh on a Steeler Sunday, by the way, which is very difficult to do, but we had thousands that got international press. And just from that one crazy performance, that moment in time in Pittsburgh that I was able to capture from linking it to a moment in time that Harry Houdini had, it took me on a crazy journey around the world. I got to become friends with a gentleman by the name of George Hardeen, who is the great grandnephew of Harry Houdini. We filmed a television show for Discovery Channel called Houdini's Last Secrets. I have some of those cool little props from set, from the show, that I got to keep as mementos, that have all become kind of part of my, you know, I think, you know, my little shrine to the art of magic in my house. And, you know, during this entire crazy run with Harry Houdini and filming TV shows, you know, really amazing things came out of it. A new venue in downtown Pittsburgh called Liberty Magic, which helped spawn, you know, numerous other projects that I was able to work on. So yeah, crafting an idea from beginning to end and seeing it through and putting those details in, when you start sprinkling those details, those touches, I think that's the fun part. And I think when people start to spot them and they come up and they say, hey, man, like, we like, you know, we saw that little touch or this, I love that. That's my favorite thing. That makes it, you know, makes it feel like all those nights of putting these ideas together, it was all worthwhile.
And all those little moments that come together are things that take time and effort and energy and resources. And
yeah,
when you say you started thinking about this years in advance, that's an interesting thing because, you know, especially now people like me are like, hey, I'm going to do a live stream. And yeah. Go on and do a live stream in like instant. Now there's obviously a lot of preparation that goes into things and we plan this for a few days, but there's something really interesting about that. How do you balance that thing of if you're really excited, you know, of course you were waiting for the date on that one, but I know you've had other ideas that you're like, this is a really good idea, whether it's a TV show, and the key to letting that happen and letting that brew to its full potential is patience. But how do you balance that patience when there's something that you're really excited about? You're like, this is going to be freaking awesome. And I'm going to still have to wait 6 years before the TV show gets filmed.
I think for me, it's always been, I have the big project, the kind of big project, the medium project, and all the small projects. And I'm always working on all the small projects and I'm chipping away at the other projects. But in the back of my mind, I know it's all for a bigger project at the end of the line, whether that was Houdini 100, whether that was, you know, getting the show with Discovery, you know, all those. It was weird how I had those aspirations, but it took those steps I had to climb to eventually to earn them, I always say.
So there's some people who say, well, I'm just being patient. When it's my time, it'll be my time and they're going to go hang out. But you're saying there's a little bit of a balance. Yeah, be patient on this big thing and then just keep building be patient for the house to be built. Mm-hmm. But while you're waiting for the house to be built, you could be laying some bricks and laying that foundation in other things.
Dude, so funny you just said speaking of bricks, because this is just to bring it full circle. Today I got a package in the mail and I'm going to grab it. I'm going to just grab it because I already opened it. It's right here. So this is what I was talking about. So I got a package today and I opened it up. I did an unboxing video for it, right? But inside this package as well, I want to first show you the address. The address is right here.
And from the Houdini house for people who are just listening to audio.
Because when I, in 2019, you came on this little journey with me where I filmed a documentary about something I discovered with Harry Houdini's home. And so when I was with you, we got to hang out with David Copperfield and we got to see his museum and did some really fun stuff. And of course, we filmed at the Magic Castle. But later on, when I got home, I ended up going and filming again in New York City, and I got inside Harry Houdini's house. And this is like this is the icing on the cake part for me, because I got in that, not only did I get in Houdini's house, I got in with cameras, and they let me come in and film and shoot this documentary. And afterward, when I was leaving, the owner of the home, Vincent, he gifted me a piece of wood from Harry Houdini's living room. This was in the wall of Harry Houdini's house. And then from it, I was able to take a nail. So I have a nail from Harry Houdini's wall, which is kind of weird. But today in that package, this box showed up bricks. I got a box full of bricks today. But these bricks were from Harry Houdini's house. So I got a whole bunch of bricks. You just don't know. I would have never told you in a million years that by hanging in a straitjacket in downtown Pittsburgh and replicating one of his events, his performances, I would be holding his bricks in my hand someday. So
that's awesome. Yeah, it's crazy. And to double down on that, that's such an interesting one, especially in this world, in right now where everyone's kind of scrambling and hustling, and you're always kind of doing that patient building the blocks. And that relates into something that I wanted to talk about that you just brought up, of us going on our grand magic adventure across the country with, you know, so many great stories of that, flying out to LA, meeting up with you, and then driving over to Vegas, and then hope to get the, you know, like, okay, we got to strategically work on this thing. I won't reveal the punchline of it too much, but like, strategically be trying to get into the in front of the right people, like David Copperfield and things, and then all of these things just kind of lining up.
I gambled hard on that one, bro. I did.
Yeah,
but I didn't know if it was gonna happen.
Yeah, but it's like all in. You went all in.
I did, and you know what? When I was putting Houdini 100 together, I knew that it could rain that day, right? It could have screwed up everything. I knew that, but I still went with it because even if it did, you know, I would have figured it out. I would have. We would have delayed it a day. Would have been called Houdini 101. I don't know, but we made it. It went off without a hitch. Thank God. When me and you went to Vegas and we were shooting, you know, I had told you, like, you know, there was just a hurricane that week, if you recall. There was a hurricane. And David owns an island. And, of course, I said, I don't know. David may fly away. You know, he may get pulled into some other – he may not be on stage tonight is what I was, you know. And all that time and that planning and getting George to Las Vegas with us could have all been for nothing. But it went off without a hitch, and we had an incredible evening with David, and, you know, he showed us the museum, and it became part of the documentary. So, but if something would have happened, I would have figured it out, and, you know, we would have rescheduled or something. But
how often in your experience, when you take these big, you take bold risks and big things that obviously pay off in a big way, but sometimes they don't pay off, and sometimes you get burned pretty hard. Yeah. So I don't want to just be like, hey, look, we're awesome. We did a cross country journey to do cool stuff, and then it all worked out, and we got to do cool, bragworthy stuff. There's some stuff that doesn't work out, and you got to have those failures to have.
Sure. I learned those, you know, while paying the dues and doing the not so fun shows, you know, I found myself in predicaments with contracts, since though, you know, I wasn't 100% happy with, but, you know, I bided my time and I really focused on the then, you know, looking down the line of the bigger projects that I had in my head that were coming to fruition. So, you know, I was able just to balance. I think it's the biggest part is just figuring out what your personal balance is how many big things can you be taking on at one time? Some guys are incredible at it. I envy guys that can do multiple gigantic projects at one time. I like to focus in on the main project, but then I like to work on the other, you know, doing shows or working on various new magic, or, you know, now we're living in this world where we're working on creating magic content for clients in the digital realm. So I'm sometimes figuring it out as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about a little bit with your, so there's some people who are just broadcasting everything,
mm-hmm.
and they're just like showing, Oh, I did this. Look at this new light that I got. Look at this. That's kind of the world I live in. I'm like, hey, look at me. I want to be out there all the time.
Sure.
And then I think you have a little bit of a different approach. It's like, you're obviously giving and being very giving and to your audience, but you're not all the time out there saying, hey, look what I just did. Hey, look what I just did. It's almost, and I think this is relevant because it goes back to that patience thing, and you're willing to let things build.
Sure.
And it's like, you flew me across the country out to LA. We made a road trip across the desert to go to Las Vegas of like, it was like an exciting thing. Cause it was like this biggest gamble. Like it might not work. And that's a lot of money that might not work.
Yeah.
And, but then it does work. And you use that journey and that adventure to build your show, but you didn't go on social media and say, hey, look at this cool thing that I'm doing. I wanted to, and I was like, hey, I want you. And you're like, wait, hold on, we need to save it.
I always have a reason to my madness. As a magician, I think secrecy and creating mystery for my audience is so important. And so therefore, because I don't want to let the cat out of the bag. I want the cat to come out of the bag in the live setting. You know, I wanted all that footage and that moment with David and you know, and what we saw and that story that was, I lived in the moment and I took living from the moment and what we documented. And I was able to give that to my audience in a format that I wanted them to see my project. I wanted them to see the live performance mixed with the stuff that we shot and the experience that I essentially created for myself. Because I, you know, I was the one kind of bobbing and weaving, trying to film in the Magic Castle. You know, I'm rolling the dice when trying to film this Houdini documentary. I didn't know they were ever going to let me in the house. You know, I had no clue if I would be allowed to film in the Magic Castle, which I know is always a big no-no with cameras because I've been there many, many times. But I rolled the dice. I said, hey, guys, can I come in? And they let me into the Houdini room right before it got demolished, before they gutted it. So I'm the last documentary to ever be filmed in that room before it was gutted. I don't know. It's just like one of the things. You take these chances and you kind of – you're committed to it, but you're willing to bob and weave if you need to.
When there's something that's that much – planning, whether it's Houdini 100 or filming in the Magic Castle or getting a private invite to Copperfield Museum, these things that you're like, you've got to say, okay, this is a long shot and it's a gamble, but also I've like got a little bit of faith that that's going to happen. So where does that what's that feeling for you when it happens? Are you like, oh, I knew it, or well, like, holy, this is actually happening?
You know, it was one of those things where I was willing to, well, one, I had backup plans. So if night one didn't work, night two, we're going to try night two. Night two doesn't work, we're going again. We're going night three. I don't, you know, and until I get a no, or, you know, or until we finally get the David's not going to see you, or, you know, one of those things. But, you know, David's an incredible guy. And I knew that. And so it was just one of those things. It was just, I had to have a little bit of luck, but I also was trying to put myself in a situation where, like Vegas, where anything is possible and luck would be on my side. So thank God it all worked out and we were able to have that experience and I was able to incorporate it into my performance because it made my show for my audience when I did that run at Liberty Magic with the show The Life and Death of Harry Houdini, where I got to play him every night on stage. I got to tell that story every night after the show to an entire room of people. And they were literally hanging on every word because it was such a cool moment. And they loved seeing me enjoy it as well. I think that was the most important part. So that's why I don't always, you know, give what I'm working on. I don't let it out of the bag as much. I like to hold it onto it for the live audience. I always have a kind of an end game in mind for anything I'm working on instead of just, you know, just hitting that share button. I have a tendency to hit save.
Yeah. And that's amazing though, because then in the live setting, that audience gets to feel that excitement that you're sharing, because you lost that feeling of that magic of you sharing it and getting the buzz because a bunch of people hype you up on Instagram that day.
Well, this is what I was thinking of. If I would have shared it back then at that moment, you know, even though I was about 3 or 4 months away from live performances, I was thinking of those few people that would have seen the content that I had put out, would have come to the show, and then would have just seen it again. And so I didn't want to have that happen. I wanted to save it and make it, you know, I wanted to have it be the first time for everyone, essentially. And I've yet to really ever put that material out into the world. And that was like about the last like 6 or 7 months of my life, and I haven't really shared any of it. And there was a reason, because once it was done with the live element, with the live show, I then had offers to take it into the television world. And so with that, I can't share it. I'm holding on to that as the negotiations to potentially take it into the, if it would be cut up into an 8-episode for a network. So then, you know, I was trying, because there's legalities when you're shooting in like a Magic Castle or something like that. So I had to be very careful with my footage and what I intended to do with it.
Yeah. And that's so that's certainly understandable thinking about in those like TV things, but then it's like for the live audience, you know, Liberty Magic isn't a big venue where you get to show off that thing for 4,000 people that night. Yeah. That's showing it off for just a handful of people. So you've decided to save that special moment, not for 10,000 people, not for a TV audience of a million people. That's just for a select certain few. So why do you care about delivering such a great experience for such a small amount of people rather than you could have posted that on your Instagram and on your YouTube and gotten millions of people to give you praise?
That's never my, I guess for me, I'd rather feel the love of the live audience than the love of a like. The internet is obviously changing for us. And this is obviously becoming our, in a way, our new norm for a while. But back then, you know, I just like every entertainer, while we get on stage every night, it's that feeling of applause and you know, that emotional connection that you make every night. And, I put so much work in on that project that my payoff was that emotional connection every night. You know, those were my likes. Those were my shares. Those were my YouTube hits. And I'll be honest with you, every night after that show was over and I got to shake people's hands, and they told me how much they enjoyed it and loved it, and you know, we're buying the Houdini book. I actually had I had this come out as well at the same time, The Life and Afterlife of Harry Houdini. Joe Pozanski, who's an incredible writer, he interviewed me for Houdini 100, and it literally, so that was in 2016 he interviewed me, and I forgot about it, and then the book came out. This literally came on my doorstep like 2 days before curtain, and I read my chapter where he wrote about me, and it gave me chills because it made me remember, you know, why I do what I do, and the audiences, you know, why I care so much about what they're experiencing, and it's to be able to do stuff like this.
Cool. Yeah, that's amazing. And there's a lot of people who have experienced your stuff in person that really felt that amazing connection. And I know really appreciate that. A bit of a sacrifice that you made to actually give them that that experience. So, I kind of wanted to mostly touch on just that, how you care about those moments for the audience. And I was kind of initially thinking about like how your stuff looks cool and you think about lighting and all that. And we went into an even deeper place that I think was really cool. If you've got a few more minutes, maybe we'll let's see if anyone drop a question. If you drop a comment, if you have a question for Lee. Joel Myers says, who's cutting your hair? So that's good. You can answer that if you want, or just,
I had my first quarantine cut.
There you go. Adam Grabowski.
I'm one of the lucky guys. I have a family member that does hair. So I was lucky to get a quarantine cut. I needed one.
He also said he wants a brick for his birthday.
Oh, you want a brick, man? All right, I'll see what I can do.
Bruce Gold says he would like to buy one of the bricks.
You want
to
buy one of these bricks? All right.
We'll have an auction soon.
I know a guy.
But Joel then says, Bruce Gold, he'll be giving them away to his closest friends, right?
I don't know. I do got a couple. I think I'm going to be getting some offers. I bought one for my dad too. So
nice. Yeah, Alex Sternin replied, sometimes all you got to do is ask. The worst that can happen is no. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Your wife says that Lee Terbosik is handsome.
Thanks, Jesse, baby.
You could see the photo there of the two of them, which was done by a lovely photographer.
You did that, man. Yeah. You came out to Catalina Island when I proposed.
More, just the nonsense adventures that when I look back somehow just tie back into Lee Terbosik.
This guy was hanging on the side of a cliff. I did a location drop of where I was going to propose, and you hung on a side of a cliff for me to catch those photos of when I asked Jesse to marry me. Thanks, man. You risked your life.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, and there was like no service, kind of, because right, we're on an island in the Pacific Ocean. Tim says each live show is a unique event you can't feel unless you're in the crowd. Kind of duplicating that. Bruce says he does a routine about a haunted brick. Oh, now he's just making up things to try to get you to give him a Houdini brick.
The bricks I actually was going to be using in my Houdini show, at some point, you know, because we were talking about, once this all went down, we were online to bring The Life and Death of Harry Houdini back to Liberty Magic this year. So that was going to be an added part of the show. I was maybe going to pass it around to select a person or something, but or make it appear under a hat like Mellini. But these were cool that came in the mail today. So thanks, Bruce. Send me a message, man.
Sweet. Joel says he's going to come over for a quarantine cigar.
Quarantine cigar, baby. All right. I've been smoking cigars this whole quarantine outside of my back porch.
Nice. All right, cool. So what else? So like, let's leave with this here. And you guys that are watching live can certainly drop in a comment, but we'll tie this up here. Somebody that's watching that kind of is doing a magic show or a variety show or a podcast, and they know the value of kind of waiting and building and allowing that thing to build into something that's, they know, yeah, if I wait 6 months, this thing's going to be way more awesome, but I want the buzz now from posting. Sure. It. What do you like, just double down on that and dig back into that just a little bit one more time as a wrap up.
Is doing these live shows now in the virtual world. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, just in general, I think. Just like, because there's a lot of people who hear that, what we talked about earlier, and they're like, yeah, but I got a sweet thing on my phone that if I post it right now, 75 people are going to be all buzzed. All
I think it depends on the project, honestly. I think if it is that long-term goal and that you don't, and you want to keep a little mystery behind it, and you don't want, you know, you want the surprise element of when you say, you know, if you're working with let's say you're working with a publicist, or you're going to put, you know, a press release out, you wouldn't be wanting to drop any of your content. You want to wait. Or if you're working on a live show, you know, those elements can differ, because now you're working with venues and you're working with press and you're working with a publicist or those types of things. I think it's just important to have a good rounded base for your show. I'm talking in marketing, though. You know, you can, the ball of wax that you put on stage every night, I mean, that's the fun part. You know, that's the creativity. But if you're working on the press or if you're working on the marketing element, these things do take time, and it's important not to rush those things to work. It's so much more worth it to go get a real logo done by someone that does real logos, unless you really have that unique skill. Video content, you know. This is one of the things that me and you have chatted about over time of doing video content for your show. I think if you have a kick-ass, you know, 90-second hard-hitting show promo, I mean, knowing how to use it the right way, I guess. But putting time and money into those things, you know, just not shooting it on an iPhone and slapping together it together in a quick edit and slapping a logo on it and presenting that as your finished product. I wouldn't do that. Because I think it's gonna devalue your brand. And that's how I've always looked at everything I do. I look at it as my brand, as a performer, as me, and all these shows and projects I do, they're all subdivisions of what I do. And I want them all to look either very similar, like as a Quentin Tarantino fan, I want them all to live in the same universe. And so I think that there's a level of quality that I'm always trying to maintain with each one of the projects I go after. So that would be my best advice, is to hire someone that really knows how to edit, hire a guy that, you know, has, you know, good camera skills and high end cameras and mics. These are all the things that are kind of sometimes forgotten about when you're trying to make the product. You know, you just want to give the creative energy and you see it, but you don't take time to chop it up and storyboard it all out. My 52 up close demo for my opening of my show, for that one, it took me 6 months of storyboarding. In Pittsburgh, it rains a lot, and so I kept getting messed up with weather patterns, and so, and filming and having the right, because I wanted the specific guy to shoot my stuff. But he wasn't always here, because he was shooting rappers and stuff like that. So I had to wait. So I had patience to get the right day, the right guy, the right, you know, and all these things. And then that's how I do it. Is that's kind of been my secret to success, is just having the patience for the project to do it the right way first.
Cool. And I'll loop back on that for people that might have just skipped ahead or clipped in. It's not waiting till everything's perfect to get started. It's like you're building the big house on the big thing, but you're also waiting.
So I've been in the game a long time, but when I tackle the projects at this time, I'm tackling projects I know what I want the end product to virtually look like. but I'm gonna find the correct fits to how to make that work. You know, whether that's working with Chris and getting your skills on something to bring something to life for me, or trusting you to shoot my proposal photos. I mean, I knew what I wanted it to look like, and so I went and I try to find the facets to fit and work the best for me. And that's really the anybody that's trying to create a live show or a digital or a virtual show, really think those things out and get the help that so you can, you know, put together a great product.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, I wanted to, as the guy who wrote the book called Just Go, I wanted to double down on saying, don't, you might not, you know, at your level, yeah, it makes sense to spend 6 months on something. But for other people, it might be like, yeah, post your podcast tomorrow, figure it out. You'll get better. And then
it will. Yeah. But when it's your livelihood and you know, like there are certain steps you want to be cautious of, because you don't want it to blow up in your face and have to start over.
Yeah. Love it.
But
it's so cool to see that. It's always, I always love every time I talk to you, whether it's like months or a year ago by or something, you'll just be like, we talked, you know, a few months ago, and it was like, oh, you're like, I'm working on this thing. And I'm like, how is this, all this stuff happening? And no one, you know, I never heard about it or anything. So it's really cool that there's just always, you're always laying those bricks. And it's like a lot of those houses never will end up getting built, but you're always building them. So it's awesome. Yeah.
Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. Yeah. I love the art of magic, and I love being a magician, and I love being an entrepreneur. So being able to do this for my career, for my literally my entire life, and has been a dream come true. And I always love to give back and you know, help where I can. So I hope somebody got, you know, guys got something out of this today.
Sweet. Yeah. Thanks for hopping in. Thanks. You guys in the comment section for contributing to the show. The people that were here watching live, we're doing these podcast chats now via remote. And these are also available over on the Between Dreams podcast on audio, and they're going on the YouTube. So they're like everywhere. If you guys, there's lots of magicians here. I think it's probably 75% magicians on every one of my live streams somehow. So if you guys hear something that you think is valuable, make sure you share it with other people. And Lee, you do in fact actually post things on Instagram. So where can we find you over there?
Instagram mostly, Facebook occasionally, but living here in Pittsburgh, so I'm just a homebody right now.
Yeah, so search your name, Lee Trebosic, you'll find everywhere on the stuff. And that's it. Thanks guys for watching, listening, and see you next time.
See you soon.